With more than half the country in lockdown and the situation in South Australia taking a turn for the worse, I'm sure anxieties are high around the country. Dr. Helen Schultz is a psychiatrist and mental health advocate and my guest. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Patricia.
What is your advice for South Australians hearing this news tonight, coupled with all of the rest, people listening everywhere on this national program, Victoria's extended lockdown, these high case numbers in New South Wales? I imagine people are feeling pretty, pretty nervous.
Look, absolutely. And I mean, obviously we're all in this together and I feel exactly the same way being in lockdown in Victoria. And I'm not a virologist and I'm not an epidemiologist, but I am a psychiatrist. And I really value the idea that a life is a life. And at the moment, we know that mental health presentations are sky high because of what is a once in a 100-year event. We are losing people to suicide, unfortunately. And, you know, if you lose someone tragically to COVID, that's preventable. And it's exactly the same for people that are experiencing mental health problems and distress. Their lives are also extremely important and also, once again, very, very easy to prevent and easy to treat and keep people well. So I really want to impress upon everybody, especially people in South Australia tonight that are really feeling so up in the air and overwhelmed, to not only look after themselves, but also to start thinking about whether or not they need to get some help if they're experiencing some symptoms that are out of the ordinary.
So talk me through that point you just made, losing people to suicide. Mm-hmm. You never want that to happen. We always want to move to a, you know, suicide zero community. That's what we want. But the statistics don't actually demonstrate that there's been an increase in suicide rates, right, during the pandemic.
Yeah, I saw those figures yesterday, and I mean, as someone on the front line, I'm not sure anecdotally. I've never seen anything like this in 20 years of my practice as a psychiatrist. I'm seeing really awful near misses and people that are really getting into a lot of trouble with substance use disorders at levels that I've never seen before. So I'm just wondering if we're not actually seeing the suicides yet, or if people are presenting for help and getting help before we tragically lose them. So really not sure about that data at the moment. The main issue is, though, that mental health is in the spotlight and it should be.
So what's your advice to people who just feel isolated and crushed by the news that they're hearing? You're saying be aware of your symptoms.
I think we've moved to another state.
It's hard to be. No, but you're aware of your symptoms. I have so many people in my life who say this and then you just can't even get in to talk to anyone.
I know. I understand that too. It's so frustrating at the moment. But the thing that I really want to impress is that, as I said, everybody can be helped. And I think, you know, we need to be a bit more clever about the funding that has been allocated to mental health. I know a lot of the organisations such as Headspace and Beyond Blue have grabbed a lot of that funding. But I think we can be smarter. And I think we can start really triaging key messages about, if you're experiencing A, you need to do this. If you're experiencing B, you need to do this. It's not just a time of being overwhelmed and anxious. People are starting to develop clinical depression and clinical anxiety as a result of an ongoing pandemic that is global. And one of the biggest problems with anxiety and depression is that it makes you isolate yourself. It tells you that you're not important. It tells you that other people are way more important than you and have it worse than you. So it actually feeds into getting people to isolate and withdraw, which is the last thing we need. So messages such as get on the phone and ring Beyond Blue and ring Lifeline, yes, they are so, so important. But I also understand that for people that are anxious and depressed, they can't be bothered. So I'm just wondering if we need to do something a bit different around that.
You've said there should be daily mental health information the same way that we get daily public health updates from our premiers and chief health officers. What would they be saying, though, at the podium standing up? It's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I just sort of feel, I mean, as a psychiatrist, first and foremost, that we're delivering health advice at every presser, understandably, and we're talking about ways that you can actually prevent catching COVID and contracting it and passing it on, and very simple broken record messages about masks and hand hygiene and social distancing and staying home if you're unwell and getting tested. We need to start at this phase in the pandemic in Australia, where half of our population almost are in lockdown. We need to get on the front foot and say, okay, if you have the following symptoms, you also need to present for help. And I mean, a simple checklist of that would be things where you're starting to get concerning. So disturbed sleep for more than 3 days with early morning wakening. So waking up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, not being able to get to sleep, or profound tearfulness over really nothing. And really importantly, things like disengaging with things that normally make you happy, like your grandkids or like your hobbies that you enjoy doing. Stopping eating or not showering, and most importantly, any form of suicidal ideation, thoughts, fantasies, you need to call your GP and get help.
So call your GP as soon as this stuff happens to you. Talk to me about the cumulative effect of multiple lockdowns. Now, obviously, if you're in New South Wales, this is awful and it's long, but I'm thinking about the Victorian experience, which I think is a particularly difficult scenario for people in their fifth lockdown.
Well, I'm currently in Richmond in Melbourne, and you know, I live near Burnley Street, and driving up and down and seeing the decommissioned bus out the front of the apartment block, going to cafes that have been deep cleaned over the weekend and, you know, absolutely dead because most of the people that come in are also isolated in their apartments. You know, I find it very hard. I struggle, but, you know, I have to keep going. But that's one thing, that oppression and that uncertainty and just trying my very, very best every day just to live for today, not expecting much more, and really being careful about how much exposure I get to the media and the presses, trying to find information that isn't really there, scrolling through social media, trying to find certainty when there is no certainty. So just trying to put limits on all of that. It's awful, and I don't think we'll really know the full extent of it until we look back on this time. But that's one thing. And then I think also this de novo presentation of depression and anxiety in our population as a direct result of the pandemic is another big concern and a huge public health issue.
And when you're seeing patients and you're talking to people, do you feel like what they're reporting to you is getting worse and worse now?
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, I've been doing some regional stints in public mental health wards, and I've never seen, as I said, the level of substance misuse and the harm that's coming from that, the types of unfortunate overdoses that are so deliberate, so well planned, with no remorse that they didn't work, terrible things that I've never really seen in my whole career, and nonstop. So presentations right through the spectrum of our ageing, so teenagers with awful eating disorder presentations, left way too late, self-harming, everything you can think of, anxiety disorders are rife. It's time to stop with the lip service and just throwing funding at each presser to organisations and really think about, you know, what can we do differently? What can we do smarter that other countries aren't thinking about? Because we do have a death toll from this that's not related to COVID directly, to the infection, but is still part of this awful pandemic.
How about the impact on young people, particularly kids?
Oh, awful, awful. So right through from young children to teenagers, you know, I've worked with patients for a long time with eating disorders, more and more severe. So I think I heard the grab from the mental health minister yesterday talking about people going to ED with eating disorder presentations. By the time you get to ED, you're pretty much moribund. It's a little bit too late, but the waiting lists for private hospital programs have blown out like I've never seen before. Most psychiatrists have closed their books. Public hospitals will make you wait 12, 15, 16 hours, whatever, after an overdose to review you. This is not in any way a fault of anybody that's administering any mental health care, but it's a realisation of this tidal wave that's following the COVID infection tidal wave.
If people are listening and one person's just texted, for instance, and there are others like this saying, you know, I'm on a 6-month waiting list, and that's particularly, I know, for people who want bulk billing as well, you know, there's obviously tiers of mental health support. What do they do immediately?
Immediately they have to remember, number one, that their health matters and they matter. So, like I said, not feeding into those thoughts around depression and anxiety that it can wait another day, people have it worse than me. You know, things around practical first aid. So dealing with what we have. Okay, so the system is absolutely at at a knife edge at the moment. What can you do about creating a community around you? What can you do about making sure that people check in with you? And the flip side of that is thinking about people in your own community, your sporting community or your school community or the workplace. Who's around at the moment that you're concerned about that lives alone or has a disability and might just need that phone call just for some human connection? Human connection and validation is extremely therapeutic, and it's kind of what we need to be moving back towards now, I think, as far as doing what we can with the limited resources that we have. And then moving on from that is keeping in touch with people that really know us so that they can tell us whether they think we're acting differently. You know, they notice that we're not showering, we're not eating properly, or, you know, that we've been up all night because we can't sleep. And then really advocating for ourselves, having an awareness and an education that what we're experiencing if we're in that space is not okay. And non-stop calling those crisis lines, calling the helplines, even if it's a long wait, getting in to see the GP and doing things that are proactive.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, absolutely appreciate it. Thank you.
Dr. Helen Schultz is a psychiatrist and mental health advocate. And if you've found some of the things that she was raising about what you might be feeling difficult because you're like, well, I do feel like that, and I know lots of people do, you can call Beyond Blue anytime on 1300 224 636, and there's Lifeline too if you're experiencing distress, 13 11 14. This is RN Drive.